eating together and being part of a strong, stable family supports them emotionally, where they feel secure and secure enough to be their own person.
So many things, really, about who we are and how we grow happen at that table.
Being together mainly happened probably around the dinner table. Even to this day, it's my favorite place to be when everyone's home. I love having everybody around the dinner table. Hear everyone laugh together. It's a lot of fun.
Studies show that the more often families eat together, the less likely kids are to smoke, drink, do drugs, get depressed, develop eating disorders, and consider suicide. And the more likely they are to do well in school, delay having sex, eat their vegetables, learn big words, and know which fork to use. Hi, I'm Kurt Bruner, your host, and thanks for listening. That's taken from a recent Time magazine article talking about the value of eating meals together as a family. Well, I think it's important for us to try to become more intentional about eating meals together, so I've been asking different people, tell me about meals at home in your house.
My family eats together every night. The family that eats together stays together. That's what my dad says.
It doesn't rhyme, though.
No, but it's just like a little saying.
So that's a routine in your house.
Well, my mom makes a big dinner every night, and then my dad just calls everyone together. Like, if we're out, he'll call us and tell us to come home to eat. There's three kids, 14, 16, and 18.
Probably 4 or 5 times a week.
We eat supper together as a family every night, no matter what the schedule. My kids are 11, 9, 7, and 4.
We probably eat dinner together 5 or 6 times a week.
We have to be intentional about mealtime, for sure.
Why?
T-ball.
There's so many activities going on.
We eat every single day at the dinner table with our family. My mom makes an excellent meal every day. I absolutely love it. It makes us grow as a family. We have busy schedules, but we just manage to do it.
When they were very young, it was kind of a captive audience, so to speak. So being boys, too, they were always hungry.
That's true.
And so getting them to the table to eat was very easy.
It probably got harder when they started doing a lot of sports activities that would interfere with the actual dinner time, you know, where someone had to be somewhere different.
So we have a 5-person family. It's my dad, my mom, me, my younger brother, my younger sister. And, well, when both of my parents are home and they, like, cook a meal, like, when they cook it, it's usually all together. But sometimes, like, when we have, like, a practice or a game or something, we'll just kind of, like, my brother and my dad usually leave early for his baseball games. And so then they'll eat earlier. And then me and my sister will have time to do our homework, and then we'll eat, and then we'll go to his game.
What makes dinner hard to have together is that, you know, Josh has got Taekwondo, and he's got surge, and I have an irregular schedule at work, and so just getting everybody together in the same place at the same time is hard.
Schedules and kids' activities and working late, all that gets in the way of consistently having dinner together more than 3 or 4 times a week.
Just 3 of us, me and my 2 parents. And my mom always cooks, like, Monday through Friday.
Yesterday, we had a great mealtime together. We try to make eating at home a priority.
So what makes it harder?
The kids' schedules, actually. Sports and extracurricular activities.
They're killers, right?
They are.
Yeah.
We're working on it really hard.
We really don't eat at the table because my dad's working all the time in Louisiana. So it's usually me and my mom, my sister, and brother.
It's more a hit-miss with my dad, but I eat dinner with my mom, like, often, a lot. It's pretty frequent. They've been separated on and off for, like, the past, like, 5 years or 4 years. My sister lives with my dad. It's, like, a really rare occasion because sometimes they're back together and sometimes they're separated. So, like, at Christmas and, I guess, certain occasions, we all eat together, but it's more of a rarity.
With our daughters now being teenagers versus when they were young, we controlled the schedules when they were young a lot more so, and we were able to, you know, just make that part of the daily routine, eating together. But now with them having jobs and sports and all these
7:30 p.m. dinners, yes. But it's still dinner as a family.
And with me teaching, I had to be more prepared with meals, so I started using the crock pot quite a bit. Mm. You had to prepare it that morning, but, you know, plug it in. When you got home, it was ready to be eaten, and it worked out real well that way.
I like it better now because my food's still warm. I don't have to cut theirs up. And,
Very true.
I get to eat warm meals now.
So that's absolutely. And even some of the things, you know, recently I changed jobs and I don't get home till later, and there are times where the girls, because their day starts so early, they may actually have eaten, and then it's not uncommon when I get home for us all to sit down at the table again just together. And that's, you know,
the girls and I may have eaten, but we all come back to sit with Dad once he's there, just to have the time, because they're hungry for the time, not necessarily the meal.
So you eat two meals.
Does it show? We just eat until everybody gets home and it joins us at the table at some point.
Keep it going.
We just put the trough out, keep going all night.
I've been reading a great book by Miriam Weinstein called The Surprising Power of Family Meals, where she talks about the family table as a ritual, as a routine way of instilling our beliefs in the next generation. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast very long knows that a primary concern, an issue that we bring up, is how to do that, how to pass our beliefs and values to our own children. And God gave us the family table as the natural means for that to take place. Simple things like joining hands around the table and giving thanks. And every time we do that, we're acknowledging our dependence upon God. She says that sitting down to a meal together draws a line around us. It encloses us and for a brief time strengthens the bonds that connect us with the other members of our self-defined clan, shutting out the rest of the world. So what happens when we do shut out the rest of the world and protect that time for a family meal?
We'd normally talk about how we're doing, and then we do a high-low of our day, like what went well about our day and what was bad about our day. And it can't be about another family member because they're right there.
And we usually just talk about school while she's cooking. Me and my dad are like we're like fixing up the house and stuff. And then whenever we eat, we always talk about our day.
We talk about our weeks and how they went, and we pray together. And sometimes we have discussions about God, but mainly just about what's going on in our lives and how everyone's doing.
You know, we always pray before dinner, of course, and it's normally somewhat of an argument on who gets to pray, which is a good thing. And then we sit down and we eat and tell the kids to eat. And then Christy and I will eat and tell the kids to eat. And that's typically how it goes. And eventually
we get to talking about our day. So, Daddy, how was your day? And the kids will ask because they see us asking each other. And so
Christy's modeled that pretty well for our kids.
We all sit down, and sometimes somebody will say the prayer, one of the kids, or we'll all pray together to say things we're thankful for. And we sit and we eat and we talk. And it's nice.
We talk about our day. We talk about highs and lows. We talk about what we're going to be doing during the week and sort of the changes. Like, I've been talking a lot about my new job because Dad was without work for 6.5 months, and so we're talking about the new job and settling in.
Describing the conversation over mealtime is almost impossible because it's always crazy. We do a lot of high-low. What's your high point of the day and low point of the day? At this point now, the kids actually initiate that.
And we ask the kids, you know, okay, what was everybody's high today? You know, one of our kids is, you know, he's neutral on the idea of doing it, so it's not great. But then one of our kids, it really connects with him, and he loves sharing his high. And then, you know, but it is interesting because sometimes you hear the really great things that happen, and then sometimes they don't want to talk about the low, and then you know, oh, well, maybe we need to talk about that more later. So it's just a good insight to the day.
Whenever I eat with my mom, she cooks dinner, sometimes I do, and we sit down and we talk about our days and our lives and how we're feeling and how we are, and I feel like it's just like a good, peaceful time for both of us to kind of catch up.
You tend to have a place you sit, and that's where you want to sit. Now, one way we tried to make people feel special is we had a certain plate that said, "You're the greatest." And whenever it was their birthday or they had some great accomplishment, they got to eat off that plate. So that made them feel special.
With my dad, it's more a little different. Things are more a little awkward, but it's still a great time to catch up on each other's lives and just see how we're doing.
Food's at the table. We'll sit down take turns praying over the day. Usually if one of the girls are having a birthday or something special going on, Robert will take extra time to pray over that and kind of rejoice about them. And then it's, you know, taking turns dishing stuff out for everybody. And then, you know, he'll just randomly pick one of the girls. Okay, highlight of your day. You know, what's going on? What happened today? Or how was? And what's nice is knowing them, we know what questions to ask. I know you had a test today. How did it go? I know you had to try out for such and such today. How did it go? You know, what, have you gotten any feedback yet? And now we don't even have to ask as many questions. The girls are like, okay, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And they want to share because they know they have the floor and that we're going to listen.
And so we always bought pizza on Fridays. And then we would spend time together and play some games. So that was always pizza and game and or movie night. And then as the boys got older and where they started driving and started having more control over their own schedule and wanting to go out, I noticed that they never planned anything on Friday because they always liked that time.
We've gone through phases where the girls have had specific days to make meals. We've had days where one or two of the girls will come with me to make the meals. We've had days where Dad's cooking on the grill and I'm doing the inside stuff. But it's never just one person putting the meal together. And that's, we get to connect a lot and talk a lot just about crazy stuff when we're in there and just laugh and have fun as potatoes go flying from the mixer or whatever.
When we eat as a family, that we never get to have it on. Sometimes my sister will try to turn it on. My parents will be like, no, Hannah, turn the TV off.
They'll come home and say, well, Mom, I was at so-and-so's house for the weekend, and they eat in front of a TV. They don't sit together. They don't talk.
Now, one thing that everyone who has researched this agrees on is that eating while watching television does not count as a family meal. The whole point is to be facing one another and to have conversation and to engage, not to be mindlessly staring at a television or fiddling with text messages and emails on your iPhone or whatever it may be. It's really to close out the rest of the world, including the technology, and focus on one another. Researchers at Columbia University at the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse have been studying this whole process of family meals and the impact it has on young people for more than a decade. And they found essentially that family dinner gets better with practice. The less often a family eats together, the worse the experience is likely to be, and the less healthy the food will be, and the more meager the conversation will be. But the more often we do it, 4, 5, 6 times per week, the better we get at it, and the closer those relationships become. Well, some of us might think, well, my kids, you know, they're so busy or they're not interested, or kind of withdraw, but we need to push through that because actually kids surveyed answer overwhelmingly that they wish they had more meals together with their parents than what they have now. So how do you make this a reality in your home? Well, since most often in most families, it's mom who dictates the family meal because let's face it, guys, if we were deciding, it would be cheese puffs and hot dogs every night. Since mom is typically the one driving what we're eating and when we're eating in the household, I asked a couple of moms who make this a priority to just share their thoughts about being intentional about family meals. So you'll be hearing from Mary DeMuth. Now, Mary is a busy lady. She's an author. She's got a lot going on. They have 3 kids, and they make eating together a priority every single day. At our family, we have sitting on our kitchen table, actually, a little book that Mary wrote called 150 Quick Questions to Get Your Kids Talking. So Mary has a real intentional focus on eating meals together and conversation around the table. Now, both Mary and my wife, Olivia, who you're going to hear from as well, grew up in homes that did not have a strong pattern of meals. And so they're breaking a cycle. They're making counterculture choices in order to make it a priority in their home. So let's eavesdrop on that conversation as Mary and my wife, Olivia, just chat about the meals at home routine.
You know, I can't even ever remember once having dinner around the table in my own home. Not one time through my whole life. The only time I remember having dinner together was when we would go to my aunt's house for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And those were the best days of my year because it was fun. Everybody was happy. We had this fabulous meal. There was love and laughter. Even if there wasn't a lot of love really going on, we all pretended for the day and it was a wonderful day. But my mom had 6 children, worked full-time, was exhausted. I remember her doing things like getting out a baking pan and putting a whole chicken in there in pieces and throwing soy sauce on top and sticking it in the oven and saying, there's dinner, and going back to her room. And then we would just eat it if we wanted to. But I don't ever remember sitting around the table having dinner, ever. Now, every once in a while, I would say we would go out to dinner. Maybe once a week or twice a month, she would take us out to dinner. And actually, I even remember that being a good experience, just because we were all sitting around the table. There were some negative things that always happened because my family had such a hard time. But I remember looking forward to that. We get to all go to dinner, but never in the home, never.
For the most part, we had meals every night around the table. I think that's just because we were economically disadvantaged part of the time. So we did have that. But I do know that when I reached 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, my mom and dad both were never home until about 10 o'clock at night. Mm. And so for 4 years of some of the most formative years of my life, when I had the most questions, when I was struggling the most, there was just nothing there. So during those 4 years, I was forced to learn how to cook. And that actually became the impetus for me to become a good cook. But it was born out of that deprivation. We have three kids, almost all teenagers, one who's almost 13. So we have a busy household, and my husband actually works pretty late, and so we eat a late dinner, usually around 6:30 or 7 every night. Very rarely is it not that we are together. So every single night we're around the table. We're kind of an unusual family in that we just don't do a lot of activities outside of the home. And there's other families that are much more active than ours, and it's harder for them to get together. So I wouldn't say that our model of 6 or 7 nights a week is doable for a lot of families. Our kids are not terribly athletic, so we don't have that sports thing thrown in there, which is a huge chunk. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's huge. But we do have a son in band, and that's a huge chunk. So we've just kind of made it a priority. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, just because growing up in chaos like I did, I really felt like having that stability every single night was something that really blessed my kids. And so we've just kind of worked our lives mm-hmm. around that.
And, you know, I would say for us, we have a sports kid mm-hmm. and our lives could be completely run by his sports schedule. Yeah. And we also made a conscious decision to say, we just won't do that. We will not be on a team that keeps you out every evening of the week and all our weekends where we don't have our dinners together. And it's, I think it's important. I think parents have to make those choices.
What about the NBA contract? What about the NFL contract? Aren't you worried about that?
No, not at all. Matter of fact, I remember specifically saying to Troy when if God wants you to be an NHL hockey player, you will be. Whether or not we take you to this exact tournament this weekend or not. In other words, you know, yeah, you can play hockey, but we're going to fit it in our family schedule. And then as you get older, if this is something that you're very gifted in and you have time to do, then the Lord can go from there. But right now, we need to be a family and we need to have these character conversations and this time together.
What we did do, like a lot of people have mentioned, is we did highs and lows of the day. And that was great. And we really got to know, you know, mm-hmm. what our kids' day was like. But we weren't feeling like we were getting to their heart and some of the things that were really bothering mm-hmm. them, some of the things that made them happy. And so on the way home from a trip to Colorado, while I was sitting in the front seat, I had my laptop with me and I just started writing out questions and just wrote, you know, hundreds of questions, and then went home and printed them off and put them in little strips and put them in a bowl. And those were amazing to really help us get to know each other, not for just for us to get to know our kids, but for them to get to know us. Mm-hmm. And then that's what birthed that book, The 150 Quick Questions, because it was such a success for us. I thought, well, let's just duplicate it for other families.
So give me an example.
Is telling a lie ever okay? And if so, when? Hmm. So there's some hard questions. I think we talked about, we kind of went back to Nazi Germany and if you were hiding Jews or something. I mean, in mm-hmm. that case, you would be protecting, and so the greater good would outweigh the mm-hmm. the lie. But it, you know, I think we had an argument about it because it's, you know, we have some strong kids that are like, no, it's never okay to tell mm-hmm. a lie. And then we would throw other things out. You know, well, what about this? What about that?
That's interesting because I remember in the book, The Hiding Place, which is about Corrie Ten Boom, and she and her family hid Jews, and her sister felt very strongly that they should never lie about those Jews being there. But Corrie Ten Boom felt like it was okay for her to lie in that case, to hide and save someone's life. And so what's interesting about that is even around the table, you're creating those discussions with your kids of which one do you think is right? And that's a good thing. Yeah.
Describe a time in your life when you were very, very afraid.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. And we, our family actually lived in France for a couple of years. So some of the younger kids said when they went to French schools for the very first time and didn't even know the language. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine what that would have been like. Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Ask the person on your right any question you choose. That's always fun because then the kids can ask, you know, like, what's your most embarrassing moment? Mom and dad, tell us when you first kissed or whatever. I mean, it could be totally embarrassing, but it really helps you get to know each other. What is the biggest waste of your time? Oh, can we say the internet?
Texting.
Yes, texting. What's interesting in questions like that is that our kids will actually point out our flaws too. Like, there was a time where I can't remember where the question came up, but we were talking about workaholism, and my youngest daughter, Julia, just pointed to me and she goes, "Mom, you're a workaholic." I'm like, I know I'm a workaholic. I'm so sorry. So, I mean, it's just kind of convicting too.
And I think sometimes, you know, kids don't know what to say. It's like you sit at the table, you're tired. And so having some preset questions helps to bring out something that wouldn't normally come out, and also just create conversation because everybody's tired. And so sometimes it's just hard to think, well, what should we talk about? I always say that to parents, the biggest thing is you need to be the adult. Because I had a mom say to me, "But I can't stand the way they chew." And I thought, "No, wait a minute, honey, you know, those are the things that we have to get over as parents. If they're in a bad mood, we have to be the ones that try to get them through that and get them talking at the table. And we have to be the adults. We have to be the one that says, okay, we're going to come to the table and try to make this time a good time no matter how we feel. I think it's just like anything you do with your kids, you can't expect perfection. And you have to not be frustrated when maybe that night you tried and everybody kind of just was mad at each other because they had already come to the table upset about something that had happened, you know. So don't let that frustrate you. It's just like anything. The next day you do it again.
And having that lightheartedness around your table is super important. Just laughter and laughing, but not at each other's expense. Mm-hmm. You know, my son mentioned earlier that we talk around the table, but we don't share a low about somebody else because it's unkind. So we also have to model treating each other with kindness.
We have tons of spills, and honestly, in all transparency, we don't handle them the best way.
Spills happen almost every meal, it seems, and I'm tired of spills. I can't believe we keep having spills.
We do lose our temper sometimes when they spill.
Sometimes. Yeah, great. You know, but...
And Christy's better at that than I am. I tend to be the one that loses it first.
Because he has to clean it up.
If we could just get them, once they spill, to get in the process of cleaning up rather than just sitting there while it's pouring all over themselves and going, "I spilled," that would be a great victory. That would be huge.
I think our second one was probably the biggest spiller.
It really wasn't an issue because we kept them in tippy cups till they were 15.
Spills are definitely an issue at every dinner table, and I think it doesn't matter if they're young, because you think it only happens when they're young, but then when they're teenagers, their gawkiness and all their hands are flying and they hit everything. And as the kids got older, I have a pile of dish towels right by my table that are those white washcloths, and we can just go grab them and clean up the mess right away. And I am the first one now to say, "Don't worry about it," because I feel like everybody kind of waits to see if we're going to panic. Mm-hmm. So if the spill happens, I say, no worries, let me get it. And we pull the towels over, and if we use too many towels, that's fine. It's done. And then we just keep going.
I think, like you said, as teenagers, their cups are much taller.
Yeah, and have a lot more liquid in them.
Whole bunch of milk in there. So it still happens, and we've learned just to let it go. Yeah. You know, I'm just clean it up and go on because spills happen.
Matter of fact, we always make a joke about it, saying that that's our offering to the spill god. So it's over. Now we can move on to something else in our conversation.
We always have to, like, wash our dishes in the sink and put them up.
We kind of made it a rule that Mom prepared the food and the meal, and so she worked real hard, you know, prior to the meal, but afterwards she shouldn't have to work as hard as well cleaning up and everything. So the boys tried to take care of all that. Maybe not to quite her standard, but at least it got done. The heavy work got done.
I'm blessed because my husband helps in the kitchen, and we both cook, and we both clean, and sometimes one does everything, or we just take turns. I have an amazing husband. And so,
do you agree with that? That
she's absolutely amazing husband.
I help my mom clean the dishes and I help her cook.
Me and my brother have to throw all of our trash away, and yet if other people leave their trash, we have to throw all of that away and put the dishes in the sink.
Children need to learn, too, that they can participate in the cleaning and taking care of your home. And I think as moms, and sometimes we want to just do it ourselves because it'll be cleaner, it'll be done right. But they've got to learn that. That's our job to teach them. Our kids now take turns making the meals sometimes. And if we want a dessert for something, then Kyle or Sean will say, let me get out the cookbook and find something to make. And they're learning how to cook so that when they do get out on their own, they're not like I was, not knowing how to do anything but pour soy sauce on chicken.
I can't wait to have some of that at your house.
Yeah. Yummy. I'll make it for you next time.
Soy sauce chicken. When we're around the table, we're not just nourishing our kids' bodies, but we are nourishing their sense of identity. We're giving them a strong start in the world that's outside our door, where the world's going to throw things at them. But we as parents and as siblings around that table are building into our kids lifelong soul habits and lifelong self-esteem that nothing can, no one can take that away from them.
Mm-hmm. And I remember the families that I always wanted to be a part of growing up, like you said, Mary, they were the families that were having meals together. They were the families that were laughing together. And I think that's something that your kids are going to leave your home with, this emotional stability, because you've given them that time around the table.
Well, I hope this edition of the podcast has given you both inspiration as well as some ideas on how you can become more intentional about creating a meals at home routine in your family, or if you've already got one, to making it just a little bit better. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.